This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. You're listening to the best of Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, this is Dan Clark and Merry Christmas. We'll be off until the 13th of January, but in the meantime, you can listen to this, the best of Screen Talk with Dan Clark. Merry Christmas, everyone.
You're listening to the best of Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
We have a brilliant guest coming up. This is a wonderful actor, comedian, writer. His name's Greg McHugh. You will, of course, know him from his creation and appearances as Gary Tank Commander Howard in Channel 4's Fresh Meat. And of course, everyone remembers him as Charlie Babbitt in How Not to Live Your Life. Your guilty pleasure, why don't you tell everyone what you picked?
My guilty pleasure, although it shouldn't be guilty, but kind of is, Total Recall.
Mm-hmm.
Not the remake.
That would be not just a guilty pleasure, but a sinful... See, I actually liked the idea of a remake of Total Recall because I think it's such a good story and such a good...
It is.
And that you could do a sort of Blade Runner Minority Report version of it.
That is a really good point.
Yeah.
You could.
But
then
they didn't.
Those sets in the original Total Recall. I mean, would you want to muck about with Arnie's eyes almost popping out and the cardboard cutout background?
And the ridiculous one-liners and the bizarre body count of people that die through
it. Incredible. It's just an incredible film, start to finish. And the one-liners are phenomenal.
Do you think, have you watched it recently? Do you think it holds up?
I think it not only does it hold up, it gets better with each viewing.
Really?
It's a phenomenal film because it is...
But you know somewhere inside you that it's not a very good film. Is that what you're saying? Or
Part of me understands that there are better films.
Okay, that's a good way of putting it.
There are better films, technically, if you're going
to
break it down.
To watch every day.
Yeah, to watch every day for an eternity. However, there's something about the charisma... I think in all the main parts in that film, Sharon Stone and...
Ronnie Cox. Who's the... what's his name? He's got a brilliant name. Main henchman.
Yes, who does that role in so many...
I can't remember his name. Oh, God.
We'll have to look up. Anyway, it's a brilliant film and it's a great story.
Yeah, that's a brilliant... And I remember when it came out being so annoyed that they put... a spoiler, which wasn't a word at the time, in the trailer, when the woman walks through customs and then the head sort of splits apart and it's Arnie underneath. You remember
2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Go on.
My brother met her in Edinburgh, or claimed to meet her at a bus stop at the Edinburgh Festival, and he came back to the house and said, "Oh my God, I've just seen the lady who says 2 weeks." And I was like, "What are you talking about? Total Recall." She was at the bus stop. And I said, "Stephen, you're going crazy." And he looked her up, and the actress who did that bit was at a show.
No.
In the Edinburgh Festival.
And did her face split down the middle?
It did, when she got on the bus and went, "Single. Single."
What?
And then it all kicked off.
Okay, well, look, I think it's a great choice, and it sort of got me a bit excited about watching it again. Your last of the two songs,
Kit's second. Another mistake, I'm sorry.
What are you talking about? It's not as buoyant as some of them.
I've chosen to... I think because I was just thinking of films and songs that have...
Well, you wanted to pick... This is from the film Highlander, which you wanted to pick as your guilty pleasure.
Sadly,
we had that like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it is a good choice. But this is from that film. It's Queen Who Wants to Live Together. Together?
Yeah, do you know that Flash song? The Flash Air song that Mercury did, the first draft. I thought it was going to work, Freddie.
Oh, man. I think we're onto something there. Yeah. We'll re-record this just for a sitcom. Okay, well, this is Who Wants to Live Forever.
Who Wants to Live Together.
And that's not Freddie. That is actually Greg still. Greg, it's been such a delight talking to you.
Thanks, Dan.
Enjoy your time off. And I'll see you in another 6 or so years, yeah?
Oh, sooner.
Okay, sooner.
There's no time for us. There's no place for us. What is this thing that builds our dreams? Slips away from us.
There's no chance for us.
I love it when people are discovered or have a moment later in their career. I'm sure our next guest won't mind me saying that. Or when people have an unexpected moment in the spotlight. Our guest today is a man who's been on the circuit for many years. I'm not sure if we've actually properly met, but we know of each other. And I first did Edinburgh in a sketch group back in the late 90s, and that was when I was first aware of this guy. I presume... this is he's just been cast in Ken Loach's latest movie, I, Daniel, and this is quite an unexpected turn, I think. It's safe to say.
It was for me, basically. My first, the land of lead role in a Ken Loach film.
Yeah. So we have with us, of course, I'm talking about Dave Johns. We've actually been chatting ages. We ask our guests to pick a guilty pleasure film, sometimes TV show, and we get them to justify whether they think it's... Some people pick a film that they know is shit, but they just love it. And other people pick a film that they think is underrated and they wish people would reconsider it. You have picked... I think this is going to fall into the former, I think. You have picked... Showgirls.
Oh, I love Showgirls. but the original one, not the remake one.
No,
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wasn't told that.
The 1994 one, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But they've made two.
I didn't know they remade Showgirls.
No, Showgirls 2 they've done.
We won't be talking about We're talking about the Paul Verhoeven directed film that's like a... There was a lot of those kind of films in the 90s. Erotic thrillers.
There were, but the thing is, I don't watch it every night, But, just with me cardi on.
Yeah, oh, no.
Hello, Neil. but if I have a few mates round,
yeah,
we want to watch something that we can have a laugh at, and they go, oh, put this on, or put, you know, like, yeah, sort of like, you know, Steve Martin. I go, no, please, you have to watch this. And I think it rises above being shit.
Yeah.
It becomes its own entity, I think. Its own
own genre.
Well, yeah, because there's brilliant films and there's shit films and there's films that are all right, but then there's this film for me,
which is on a whole other level.
It's just, but it's, and I think it's, I think the whoever wrote Zoolander, must be Sugars, think, must be who wrote Zoolander.
I think it was Justin Theroux.
Was it?
Who's an actor as well as a.
Well, he must be a Sugars, because it is so. It's like all that, you know, all that blue sapphire and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all that, but for real, and there's no sense of irony in it at all.
I see. I just don't know whether they're all secretly having a laugh in this film or not.
There is no way they're not. It is so earnest, you know.
It did really badly at the time.
She's standing with no clothes on, and she's dancing in the strip club, and she wants to be a big Vegas showgirl, and she's standing with these tassels, and she goes in this guy, and she just says, "Bring him." She goes, "I'm not a stripper, I'm a dancer," you know. Oh. And he goes, "Well, why didn't you put some clothes on?" And, you know, I think you are a stripper, you've just been taking your clothes off over there, you know. There, and it's all very earnest.
Yeah.
And if you want to see, I mean, bad acting.
Yeah. But this is the thing, it's almost too bad that I wonder if it was deliberate to be that they went, yeah, let's do this a bit hammy. There's some good actors in there, like, you know, Carl McLaughlin and
You know who went up for the part of Naomi, the real Crystal, Elizabeth Berkley got it, was Angelina Jolie.
No way.
And Pamela Anderson went up.
Serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because I felt sorry for that actress, Elizabeth Berkley, because that was going to be a big film, and it was going to do for her what Basic Instinct did to Sharon Stone. It was going to prepare. And the film just got slated at the time, and she...
But the poor darling can't act.
No?
She can't.
Oh.
That's why it's so... Like she tries. What it is...
She's
acting. She's trying to.
You know what went wrong? She didn't try hard enough not to fuck it up, Dave. She should have given me a call
and said, "Dave, what do I do?"
Yeah.
I think what it was.
Don't fuck it up.
She's trying to act too much in it.
Yeah.
And I think you can. It's funny you saying this is probably thinks this is my big break.
Yeah.
And then she's obviously acted it sort of. So, like, you know, it's just some of the scenes. I mean, that scene where she's like, I mean, they've got the most unerotic lesbian scene I've ever seen in my life.
I watched a bit last night, and there was a scene where she...
She goes, what are you doing? She goes, "I'm doing the finest cocaine. I find it loosens you up for dancing."
Oh, wow.
And you go, yeah, that's what I often find, you know what I mean? I think cocaine is a lot more than loosening up for dancing, you know? But I think what it is it's that sort of, every single scene you just think, this can't get any worse.
Yeah.
And it does. And then what happens is, after you've had a few beers, we just start laughing, and it's cruel, but it's got to be done.
I think it's safe. I think everyone knows that it was not a great film, so I don't feel like it's... By saying it publicly, it's like people were being hurt, I don't think. Except for maybe Elizabeth Berkley.
The lovely thing is, it won loads of Worst Film Awards, and the director went and...
Collected them really?
Personally, which I think, that's why I like it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's just gone, "I've made a right stink here." Okay.
Well, they're still awards, I'm going to get them.
You know what I mean? And I think that made me think...
What happens, right? Because there's like the Razzies and stuff, the Oscars. Do they go up and do they still do a thank you to people when it's the worst film? Like,
most people,
thanks to, Sharon for costume. She also helped me fuck this film up. The actors, thanks for being shit.
But most of the directors and the stars don't go up and collect them. It's the ones who've got the balls who go, "Oh, bollocks, I go." Yeah. And he collected them.
Oh, that's great.
And he goes, and he was like, which I find... makes me even more endeared to the music and tour, you know.
Absolutely.
To the film as well, you know.
So, listen, I think it's definitely a guilty pleasure. It's not an underrated film that people have misunderstood. It's 100% a guilty pleasure.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't tell anybody that I watch it.
Well, you just have, I think. that is a great choice. Now, we're going to end with a choice of music. Now, obviously, because... I, Daniel Blake isn't out until 21st of October. Yeah. There isn't a soundtrack yet, and we like to play music from films and things on the show.
There's no music in the whole film.
Is there not?
No.
Oh. Well, then maybe that's why there isn't a soundtrack.
That's why he's done it, because he wanted it to feel very stark.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying to me, he goes, the thing about this film is, for you and Hayley, is you're very exposed.
Yeah.
If you're not being truthful, it'll show.
Mm.
Because music can hide loads of different bits, and it can tell people how to feel.
God, he really just put you in the deep end, didn't he, with this film?
Well, I think
you swam, so that was good.
Yeah, but I just think it was very safe. I felt very safe with him, you know? So, there's no music in it at all, you know?
Well, so what we did then is we picked from another Ken Loach film. This is a lovely piece of music from Looking for Eric, where he got Eric Cantona, another non-actor, which is another bold choice.
Do you know he never told the actor that Eric Cantona was in the film?
No way.
The guy who played Eric Cantona, the guy who played the young, the bloke was having your problems with his marriage and all that, he said that Eric Cantona, you're trying to find Eric Cantona. He never, because you only get a couple of pages of script every couple of days, so you don't know what the story is. I didn't know how Daniel Blake was in it, so he just gives him bits of script, so he doesn't know that and Eric Cantona is really in the film. So there's this scene where he opens the door and Eric Cantona just stands and the guy goes, "Fuck me, it's you." That was real.
And they got
because
that
he
on
wanted,
tape.
Because he wanted that real sort of
reaction.
Reaction. So that's the sort of things he does all the time. You know, he doesn't tell you stuff. So he'll say things like, "Right, David, this scene, I want you to go over and open that drawer." And you'd go, "No, you open the drawer."
I don't know what's in it. So you're thinking through the first couple of weeks of I, Daniel Blake, you're going, maybe my character turns out to be a superhero.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not Spider-Man.
Okay, so this is the track called Looking for Eric from the film Looking for Eric by George Fenton. Dave, it's been an absolute pleasure for coming in. Good luck with the film. Good luck with all the festivals. Good luck in the New Forest.
Okay.
See you soon. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
listening to the best of Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
So joining me today is one half of the powerhouse duo behind Peep Show and Fresh Meat. He's a writer, producer, and this I didn't know about, a novelist. He's giving me a fairly confident little raise of the eyebrow. I didn't know about this. I am, of course, talking about Mr. Sam Bain. So let's move on to your guilty pleasure. Very rarely have I been made to watch something that I think... I don't know if I can... I'm still trying to digest it all because I watched it
last
night. Me
too, I watched it 20 years ago. I'm still digesting
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I think I hated it.
Yeah, I think you should have hated it.
Can you tell everyone what you picked as your guilty pleasure?
Film, Matthew, that I'm choosing this week.
I do want you then to come out and recreate the whole film.
Is Bitter Moon. Now, Bitter Moon is not a film that is, you know, Jim Halleck was talking about View to a Kill and, you know, it's not a big movie that everyone's seen, but I think everyone should see it, just mainly as punishment for their crimes.
Well, it's directed by Roman Polanski.
Definitely.
Now, he is considered, when you, you know, forget about stuff that's happened in his life, he is considered one of the greats, like genuine master of the craft. He has directed Chinatown, Rosemary's Baby... I mean, you know, some absolute classics. He even directed the film before this, Bitter Moon, is one of my sort of underrated favourites.
Frantic.
Which is Frantic.
Good movie.
I love Frantic. Yeah. And for some reason, people never really mention or talk about it.
I agree, it's good.
And yet, 2 years or 3 years later, he makes this...
Bitter Moon.
I mean, what genre is it?
Well, I'd call it a softcore psychodrama.
Softcore psychodrama. Which they did do a lot in the 90s.
Yeah.
But this isn't like Basic Instinct or Fatal Attraction.
Much more boring than those.
Way more boring. Oh, my God. I mean, so can you describe the plot? I mean, I could give it a go, but I don't know.
Well, it's... Okay, so it's English couple played, thank God, by Hugh Grant and Christian Scott Thomas. They're sort of in their late 20s at this point, very young and beautiful, and they're having marriage problems. They're on a cruise, like most people in their late 20s would do, go on a cruise, lots of old people.
Yeah.
And they meet an angry, bitter man in his wheelchair.
Already sounding like an amazing plot. Yeah.
And a sexy French younger woman who's his wife. And the whole film is basically the guy in the wheelchair trying to tell Hugh Grant the story of his... incredibly intense sexual relationship with this woman in his cabin in his wheelchair. It's hilarious. They keep doing the same thing of, let me tell you the next bit.
Yeah.
Come to my cabin. And they keep having this endless conversation, which you flash back to endlessly.
Yeah, and the whole film is just flashbacks of this story that this man's telling about his erotic relationship with this girl. And the flashbacks go on. The first flashback was so long that when it cut back to him telling Hugh Grant the story, I was like, oh, I forgot Hugh Grant was in this.
Yeah.
And he, like you say, every time he goes, hey, come to my cabin tonight and I'll tell you more about my relationship. And he's like, bloody, I don't want to. But then still goes. And then, you're sick, this is sick. And then, listens.
Oh yeah, it's so wrong, it's brilliant.
And look, then it's just the flashbacks are him telling him this story about how he met this girl.
Yeah.
They had an amazing sex life, and then it kind of went...
Horribly wrong. Dark.
But
twisted.
Not with too many sort of plot twists or turns.
No, it's very linear, quite boring. Apart from the sex, which is quite interesting if you like sex.
Well, it's interesting because... I kept thinking, that actress is Roman Polanski's wife.
Yes.
And was at the time.
And she's in Frantic.
I remember really having the hearts for her in Frantic.
Yeah, she's, you know... See, what I love about this film is that it's both terrible and quite brilliant.
I didn't get the quite brilliant bit.
Okay, what I think it's brilliant about it is all the actors are great. And they're doing a great... They're putting everything into it. I don't think you could say there's any bad performance in this film.
No.
The script is terrible.
Yeah.
But they're playing it completely wholeheartedly.
They're committed.
And that's what I love about it, because it feels like they're really going for it and telling an important story but it's utterly risible and ridiculous. And yeah. I love that combination. Also, he's Polanski. It sort of looks nice. It's not terribly directed.
No, but there were things in it, like the music, not the songs, not the pop songs that he used in there, but the actual soundtrack music, the score, and then the way he transitioned from someone telling him a story to the flat, that felt like tropes, like real proper.
You're right. It would be a shock to anyone if you didn't know Polanski directed it, right? Feels like a real B movie by some hack director.
And so then it makes me think, was this some kind of joke?
Yeah, but I don't think it is. And that's one of the things that I've obsessed with this film is like some of the scenes are totally. I watched it with my wife who was laughing.
Yeah.
I kept having to pause it because she was laughing so much. But I would love to think, and I don't think it was intended to be funny.
No.
It takes itself very seriously, which is obviously the best way to be funny.
Well, there's also moments in it where it is quite sexy, but there are also moments where it's the least erotic film I've ever seen.
And that's what's so great. But I mean, there's a couple of sex scenes which I would say are the funniest sex scenes I've ever seen.
Just bizarre.
So the George Michael Faith one, for example.
Yep, hence why you picked George Michael earlier.
She's pouring milk over herself. George Michael's playing very loudly in Congress, not as really a sexy song particularly.
No.
Then she goes down on him, and as he's reaching the moment of climax, the toast flies up from the toaster.
Which is like something from a comedy movie.
Exactly.
I mean, Roman, if you listen to this podcast, please call in and just tell us. What were you... Was it an experiment? Was it a joke? Do you believe in this film? Do you still stand by it? We just can't work it out.
The other thing I like about it is I think it's a very French view of an English couple. This kind of like very bumbly, kind of frosty, sexually sort of...
Repressed
couple, and brilliantly played by two great actors, but they're kind of wonderful cliches.
Well, if anything, the appearance of Kristin Scott Thomas and Hugh Grant must have had some kind of some kind of impact on them being cast in Four Weddings. So there's probably. If you're a fan of that film, then
the other film from this period I almost picked, another favourite of mine, is Lair of the White Worm. Have you watched that?
No.
Ken Russell.
Oh, well, there you go.
Hugh Grant, Peter Capaldi, Amanda Donahue.
I'm in. I'm sold.
Yeah. Scout scene with Amanda Donahue as a vampire. She picks him up in her car, which has to be seen to be believed.
Well, Ken Russell always had a bit of sexy time in his films.
No, he had an interesting period for Hugh. I think that, he was going through a tough time.
It got tougher in the late 90s on a certain street in LA. Do you remember that? That was
I was aware.
You were
of that.
In the car. Well, I've not said this before about a film, and I feel bad because Polanski's actually been like one of my favourite filmmakers, and one day I'd like to work with him. But I don't like saying bad things about films, and normally a film's so bad it's good or it's funny or whatever. But this was I did sort of go from hating it to sort of liking it, because then I started to imagine you laughing at me having to watch it and the ridiculousness of it, and that it's so committed to these long sort of meandering, like you say, you kept saying it's just really boring.
Sorry
in place
about that.
Much too long. But if you
but you must have enjoyed the scene where he's getting a blowjob and the little dog of the prostitute comes
that was a weird
starts
one
starts attacking him
and grabs it on the neck as he just lots of weird stuff in it. But if you do happen to want to watch a boring erotic drama,
brilliantly acted, terribly written, quite a lot of
the same two tits.
But
if that's your bag, then this is the film for you.
It's a great 80s pop soundtrack.
Yes. Oh, there is that as well. So in a weird sort of way, I think we've just sold that film. So play us out, we are going to play another song. You've really committed, because normally people pick just songs or score music from any film or TV show they love, but you've just gone today, Bitter Moon, you've just completely committed to this whole thing. So you picked the Bitter Moon as the guilty pleasure, and both songs from the soundtrack. just before I introduce it, thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I can't wait. I know that you've probably got stuff coming up that we can't discuss, but I look forward to whatever you do next.
Thank you.
You're a brilliant writer, and thanks. So here we have From Bitter Moon, Stop by Sam Brown.
All that I have is all that you've given me. Did you never worry that I come to depend on you? I gave you all the love I had in me. Now I find you lied, and I can't believe it's true. Wrapped in our arms, I see you across the street. And I can't help but wonder if she knows what's going on. Oh, you talk of love, but you don't know how it feels. When you realize that you're not the only one. To walk away.
I tried to walk away,
but it's not that easy when your soul is torn in two. So I just resign myself to it every day. Now all I can do is to leave it up to you.
Oh,
you'd better
best of Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Wonderful actor, comedian, writer, and ex-carpenter?
Scaffolder. I'll take carpenter.
Yeah?
It's a hell of a trade, carpenter. I've had some done at my house recently. It's a really good trade.
Is it something that you sort of look back on in your... Well, first of all, I should sort of just make sure everyone knows who I'm talking to and that I'm not actually talking to a scaffolder who wishes he was an actor, writer, comedian.
Yeah. Illusions of grandeur.
I have with me Tom Davis.
What's your favourite musical?
Hairspray.
Which we get onto now. Well, yeah. There's a segue for you. I wasn't going to ask you yet, but you got
no, that. It's my favourite musical.
You're talking about... So this is... We ask our guests to do pick a guilty pleasure. And that can be a film that they know is shit, mm-hmm. but they love.
Yeah.
Or they think is actually really great, but just misunderstood. Which camp does that fit?
I think it's amazing. I mean,
you're talking about the original,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
the John Waters
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Ricky Lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched it. When we talk about your lowest ebb, I watched that story of Tracy Turnblad and was massively inspired. Genuinely. Like,
yeah?
Yeah. I think it's a brilliant film.
How old are you, do you mind me asking?
37.
Okay. So you're
a
couple of years younger than me.
Yeah.
So I went to the cinema to see Hairspray.
Really?
Now... Not on purpose.
Right. Date?
Kind of. I was stood in the queue to go and see, I think, Three Men and a Baby or something.
God, you are. How old are you?
Very, very close. I just turned 40.
Oh, happy 40.
Yeah. Thank
yeah,
you.
Great.
Yeah, thanks.
You actually were really good for it. Generally, I generally remember watching your show, and you actually haven't aged a day.
Oh.
You still look, yeah. You could go and play a 21-year-old. I couldn't play a 21-year-old when I was 13.
Yeah.
I looked about 45.
Oh, well, look, this has absolutely made my day. So we can wrap up now. I'm going to go and get a few pints. I was stood in a queue to go. I think it was Three Men and a Baby or like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. A film like that. A bit, I was going to say, you know, like a man's film, like Three Men
and a Little Lady, that infamous action movie.
And me and my mate met some girls in the queue. They were going to see Hairspray. And he was really confident, this friend of mine. We were like 11, I think. We were 11. Yeah. And he chatted them up and we went and watched Hairspray and just French kissed in the back. First time
ever.
Were
you and your friend or you?
Yeah, we were like, come on, like this, girls. Look, we'll show you how you do
it. Is this sick?
I mean, we were watching a John Waters film.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
It was the first time I ever kissed a girl properly.
Wow.
With tongues. So I don't really remember an awful lot about Hairspray, other than it is incredibly camp and
full of
bright colour and sort of a
It's
bit
one of those films I think that if you look at it principally as just going, it's very camp and it's very... But it actually, it's got a genuine... I watch it and, as I was saying about Leanne, look, I generally think it's got an amazing storyline and it's got, I always just think it's sort of, her quest and to do what she wants to do. It sort of breaks down barriers. I find it very inspiring.
When did you... How old were you when you first saw it?
Probably about 28, 27, 28. Literally would not the sort of thing that I'd ever... And I think it was on like film 4 of an afternoon. And I just said that.
Did you just say of an afternoon?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know people still say that.
Yeah, I mean...
You're quite old school, aren't you?
Old school London, yeah.
It was of an afternoon. The shops had shut.
This is me. This is what you get when you put me in this scenario is me trying to talk well.
You don't have to.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a weird scenario. Obviously, people that are listening to the podcast are not... We've filmed this one, so if you're watching it, you'll see. But we're in an office where Tom works.
Yeah.
And it is a bit like the strangest job interview ever. Like,
it does feel like it feels like genuinely I wish I'd cleared up before. And the guy that I write with and directs my stuff is essentially a bit like my wife, in the sense that he will be like, look how dirty it looks on there, and there's just rubbish everywhere. Which I'm
so you're getting it from both ends, aren't you?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, the nagging.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that either of them are nags. They're both
beautiful, wonderful people.
Oh, they're both very attractive.
And you could do nothing without them.
No, and on both accounts, I'm batting, hitting far below my above my station.
Who spoons the best?
My wife's a, she's a little spoon. She's
You got married quite recently.
Yeah. What, 3 months ago?
Where was my invite? We weren't close enough then, were
we? No. It's a funny thing, you know, where people always say, are you married?
No.
Right, so as soon as you get married, you will literally, everyone you bump into, for about, well, ever since now, so it's what, three, there's a guy who gets on my train in the morning.
Yeah.
And he went, saw you on Soccer AM the other morning. I went, oh, yeah. He went, didn't know you got married? I went, yeah, it's around the corner. He went, where's my invite? And I thought, what? Like, you got on my train.
Yeah,
I live up the road.
What would the nameplate be, guy from the train?
Yeah. Where am I sitting? I don't know, mate.
Wow, that is, I mean, the wedding thing's quite difficult, though, because unless you've got shitloads of money, you do have to stop inviting people at some
and
number.
My problem is that guy from the train nearly got invited. I have an obsession. I meet people. I love people.
Mm.
You know, it's what my job is, and so I'll meet and I'll go to my wife. Oh, this fellow, cleans the offices at work. Luke, what a lovely man. Yeah. He's coming to the wedding. He's bringing his wife. He's going to sing a song. So it's a funny thing. You have to be really careful of what it can spiral out of control quite easily. Yeah. But it was a great day.
Good.
Best day of my life, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I loved every second of it.
I always worry, I don't think it would be, I'm in a relationship and I love my girlfriend deeply, but I always worry, not with her, if it was someone else or other people, do they ever get to the wedding and go, I think it was just all right.
I think if you're worried about what other people think on a day of your wedding, there's a bigger problem than...
Not what other people think, but does either the bride or groom at the end of the day go...
Again, I think for me it was...
A bit underwhelming, really.
I mean, because hopefully I'll only ever get married once, I didn't have that... I mean, there must be...
You could marry her again. Yeah, it sounds like you enjoyed it.
every year. Yeah. This is getting expensive. Yeah. I think it's... Yeah, I mean, there must be people out there who think... Well, I mean, I went to a wedding last year in Cyprus, and... 20% of the people turned up, and it was pretty, it was a bit heartbreaking, really.
If you can have it in a club in Iron Apa,
expect
some dropouts. Tom, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
It's been a pleasure, thank you.
And I've,
what it's like.
Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure. Hairspray, right?
Yeah.
Was the original, because I can't quite remember, was it a musical as well?
They did
a remake.
Yeah.
There were songs in the original.
It was still a musical.
Show how much I was paying attention. I was snogging my mate.
Yeah.
We're going to play out with this song from Hairspray. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you. Bless you.
Stop the one. listening to the best of Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
With me in the studio is Mr. Rhys Shearsmith. Rhys. So, your guilty pleasure. This is something. This actually blew my mind watching this. Before Good. We talk about it, what are the kinds of. I know that, you know, this is probably an easy guess that you are heavily influenced by horror and cult films and thrillers, but do you have, like, say. Do you have like three films that are so that people can put this into context? They don't think that your guilty pleasure is some reflects your real taste or anything.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Do you? What are like three of your
this
top?
This is an anomaly, is the one I've picked. But I like my top three. I don't know. King of Comedy,
Good
Nero,
yeah.
Probably Jaws. Probably we talked about that earlier. Theatre of Blood, Wicker Man. Mm-hmm. Don't Look Now, you know, some of the great horrors. Omen, I was obsessed yeah. with for years. Creepshow, you know, yeah. There are a lot of horror films, but not all the Python forays into film I love mm-hmm. as well. The Airplane films, you know, just for their hit rate. Yeah, so I've got lots, I mean, a very eclectic
taste.
That
is a wide, yeah, yeah.
But this is a particular
favourite. Why don't you
tell favorite.
Us all what you've picked?
So I picked the 1990 film by Michael Winner called Bullseye. Which some people will be groaning at that now and in delight, I hope.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a film that Mark and I think me and Mark more than Steve as well became quite obsessed with watching for a lot of the time on tour. And it's quite extraordinary. I mean, it's almost unwatchable. You said it is unwatchable.
I think it. Well, I didn't get to the end.
You didn't get to the end.
No.
Oh God,
I'm sorry.
It gets better and better. It's the premise is.
Do we have a clip, by the way? We have a clip. Let's just play this to give people a sense of... This is the very beginning, I believe.
They say that everybody in the world has someone somewhere who looks like they do. It was my bad luck that the man who looked like me was an American scientist working on some scheme to produce cheap electricity by a thing called fusion. His name was Dr. Daniel Hickler. He was an idiot.
Now, that is literally the very first few seconds of the
That's
film.
That's what's hysterically funny about it. Not 3 seconds in, this exposition yeah. starts. That's to try to desperately explain this insane plot. And that doesn't stop till 2 seconds at the yeah. end credits. It's going on still. And then I got the money I was able to give. It's ludicrous. And it's terribly
What is
shot.
The plot? Can you describe
I
the plot?
I can't really. I don't really. I've watched it many times. I don't really understand it. It's like, I don't know. It's about two... Michael Caine and Roger Moore play these sort of lovable rogues, but they've got dual roles. They play these people that have created this fusion, these scientists.
Well, they've both got doppelgangers. What are the chances?
It's like, I know, exactly. Sort of like, what's that Shakespeare that got two sets of twins? It's that,
yeah.
but done by Michael Winner.
And, which is a film we were... That's how the pitch went, that
yes,
was.
Yeah, yeah. As You Like It, is it? No, yeah. not As You Like It, Oh, God, find out which one it was. But anyway, yes, it is a terrible film, and it's badly edited. It's not even very well made. It's every joke falls flat. I mean, the astonishing thing about it is how poorly made it is. It is literally, there are cuts in it. The edit is so loose sometimes. Michael Caine sort of is in full mid-shot, and then he goes to open the door, and then it cuts the other side of him. And he's doing the same action again. It's so ropily
like
edited.
Double open. Yeah. yeah.
Terrible.
There was a bit where there was a single shot of him, and he sees a bus off camera, and he does some of the worst seeing a bus acting. And then we cut to a bus that was obviously shot like the next day or something.
Did you get to the Scotland bit where there's all that footage of Highlands of Scotland?
Yeah, loads of stock footage.
Yeah, yeah.
But what surprised me about this is a lot of people's guilty pleasures are films that maybe are, they're just a bit kind of too mainstream, or they're just they're really cult, they're actually
right.
good but people don't really know about them, or
yeah.
this is a strong contender for technically the worst film.
Yeah, I
mean, and I'd see why it's a guilty pleasure, because there is a lot of fun to be had
there
watching
is, yeah.
these people.
I would absolutely recommend it.
I mean,
it's jaw-dropping.
I don't know what's worse, Michael Caine's American accent,
oh my God.
Or Michael Caine's Michael Caine accent,
know,
which
yeah.
is also really weird.
It is astonishing.
And in a
it,
film yeah. with so much bad editing, set pieces, design, you know, music, it's weird that the prosthetic nose is actually quite good.
I know. It's like the only good thing in it. But yeah, he has some terrible lines.
And Roger Moore seemed trying to do a slightly less posh accent as his gangster character.
That's right. Yeah, of course.
So that there's you can tell who's him and the doppelganger.
But there's great bits where they've got the doppelgangers together. So there obviously is two sets of. There's doubles with bad Michael Caine wigs on, mm-hmm. and they have fights together, and it's just astonishingly edited.
I kept thinking when I was watching it, because it sort of reminded me of the look of, and feel of it, of A Fish Called Wanda.
Right,
and
yes.
it sort of reminded, it made
See
me think.
What you mean, especially the music as well, that kind yeah. of 80s. Kind of
you
drive,
know, 80s
yeah.
London crime caper.
Yeah, it's that's a terrible disservice to Fish Called Wanda.
It is, yeah. it is, which is a brilliant film.
yeah.
It felt like Michael Winner went, I can do that.
Yeah.
And they just decided to do it. Weirdly, it's two of the names on the screenplay credit are Lawrence Marks and who's the...
Gran.
Gran, what's his first...
Morris
Gran.
Yeah.
Morris Gran.
And
they've written great stuff, so I don't know what happened.
I think it's the execution of it, because there's a running gag at the end when they're being chased and through this sort of... They go to the Highlands of Scotland to secure this deal for the fusion secret. It's just absolutely terrible. And there's a continual bit where Caine gets hit by sticks and swords and things, and it's just it's a misfire every time. You know? Yeah. Terrible.
There isn't
film.
A single. Yeah,
no, it's awful. There's a brilliant bit at the end where they're both on. They chase after their counterparts. They dive on a motorbike.
Mm-hmm.
It's two elderly men, and it's there's these shots where you can just. It's clearly on a dolly, going about 2 mile an hour, really carefully, with them sat up placed on it, and then trying to cut it to make it look like it's exciting, and they're going fast. It's just a joy from beginning to end, in a terrible way.
When I watch this, I actually get scared, and I'll tell you why. Because I think, this is Michael Caine, Roger Moore, whatever you think of them, they are, you know, legends in their own right. They've made good films.
Yeah.
Michael Winner, he's made, I mean, Death Wish is quite a good film, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
It can go that wrong. And I direct a bit, and I always think, what if... I get it that wrong.
Yeah, you do a bullseye.
Yeah, I pull a bullseye.
I know. Well, that's the fear, isn't it? You must not.
How could it not? How could all those people working on it? I mean,
it's so cheaply filmed, and it's dirty looking. It's sort of it looks like a confessions film. It feels very almost.
No, confessions are they're actually quite well made, I think.
Right, in comparison, right? Okay.
It's a really good choice, Reese.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you might.
I thought you would know it. I'm glad you haven't introduced you to it.
There's actually a couple I've not known. Maybe
that's
like
great.
Two.
I'm glad to see.
I mean, the thing about Caine's oeuvre, let's say, is that 80s to mid 90s, where he did shitloads of films.
Terrible films, yeah.
And there's like three or four in there that if he had just done those, his career would have been impeccable. I think I've got a list here somewhere. Like in that period. From 80 to 95, before he did Blood and Wine with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
He did something like 35 films.
Wow.
And I can...
Was Jaws in the middle of that lot?
Jaws 4 was there.
Yeah, of course.
But the ones that are good, genuinely brilliant films, are Hannah and Her Sisters.
Yeah.
Mona Lisa, I like.
Yeah, he's great.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah, he's funny in
he's
that.
He's brilliant
really
in that.
Good, yeah.
And Educating Rita.
Brilliant, yeah.
I think, and The Muppet Christmas Carol, which you can't
That's one of those ones, and a little bit like this, where if he doesn't have to be there, it's not him.
Yeah.
You just watch that again, and it's like any back shot, it's just not
body
him.
Body double, really.
Yeah, a lot of body double, yeah. He's physically can't get away with it being there. But he obviously wasn't there on the day.
That's amazing. That's only about 6 out of 35.
That's not bad.
And Steve Oram, as you know, he was in before and he picked The Hand.
And
it's making me think you could probably do a series of Guilty Pleasures just on Michael Caine films.
Yeah, I bet you could. I'm sure he should be the first to say it, yeah. But isn't it funny, that terrible accent, and then he wins the Oscar for Side of House Rules, doing the same voice.
It's weird. And when he's good, I love him so much.
Absolutely, yeah.
But he clearly... Did you think he's someone that just needs a director? Don't know. That's
I don't
a weird
know.
Thing
yes.
to say,
Who
isn't
knows?
It?
Yes, that
he
be,
is a legend. He's
is,
done really well.
Yeah.
Why am I saying whether he needs a director or not?
He knows what he wants. But that was maybe a friend. The very final shot, which you haven't seen because you've not seen the end, is John Cleese turns up in it.
To try and save?
No, he's on the beach at the end. You've got to watch it. It's just ridiculous.
I'm going to watch the end of it because it is enjoyable. So that is Bullseye.
Yeah.
Please check it out. So, Reese, thank you so much for coming on. It's been
You're
an
welcome.
Absolute pleasure chatting to you. Good luck with the play and
you,
the third
yes.
series of Inside Number 9.
Thank you very much. Yes.
The last song you have picked, yes. do you want to explain what this?
Well, this is from, I think, 1977? I can't remember. It's All That Jazz, which is the film. And it's the last song in All That Jazz. And All That Jazz is about this sort of... It's sort of based on the life of Bob Fosse. He directed it. And in the film, he's played by Roy Scheider, who's sort of being Bob Fosse. And it's just a horrible decline of a man in sort of the death throes. Bob Fosse had a heart attack, and he wrote it about death and facing death. And there's a great... It's a very black comedy in the way that there was a spate of those in the 70s. You know, those great, gritty 70s films like American... The Raging Bull and... French Connection, and it's mm-hmm. in that vein. It's very brilliantly edited. There's a finale in sort of as he's in his death throes, having a heart attack, where he's got a big song and dance number, and it's to the Everly Brothers' Bye Bye Love, where they sing Bye Bye Life.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Really
and really good to see Roy Scheider doing something
or singing
so,
or dancing.
Yeah. Thank you very much. What awesome. A great choice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I sure am blue.
He sure is blue.
I sure am blue.
He sure is blue.
I sure am blue.